Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Bigger Pockets Podcast Network. I'm your host today, Dave Meyer. If you've been following along the last couple of weeks, both on the Bigger Pockets Podcast and our sister podcast, the On the Market Podcast, we've been covering in depth the NAR, National Association of Realtors, antitrust lawsuit developments. For those of you who haven't been following, first and foremost, you can go listen to the episodes we released last week, which was sort of a factual accounting of the lawsuits, what the jury decided, what is in the actual settlement that NAR agreed to last week. Today, we're going to be going into what happens from here. And while last week we talked to a reporter, this week we are actually going to bring in four experienced investor-friendly agents to hear, first and foremost, their reaction to this news about the NAR settlement, what they're doing today to modify their business, what they think might happen in the future, and how investors should be changing their approach to working with real estate agents. We have a great lineup of guests today. First and foremost is Avery Carl. You might have heard her on the Bigger Pockets or On the Market podcast before. She's a massive agent, owns a big brokerage in Florida called The Short-Term Shop. She also wrote a book on short-term rentals for Bigger Pockets. We have Craig Kurlop, who's an agent out of Denver and the founder of the FI team. Next, we have Juliet Lalau, who is an agent working in both Hawaii and Denver. That sounds awesome. And she is the founder of Heavy Realty. And last but not least, we have Mike Savignago, who is an agent out of Chicago with United Real Estate. And again, all these are agents who work with investors, have a lot of experience in this industry, and are going to share their thoughts and insights about the changes in the agent industry with us. So let's get into it. Avery, let's start with you. In case any of our audience is unfamiliar or didn't listen to last week's show, where we sort of went into the technicalities of the settlement, can you just fill us in on how commissions had traditionally been split prior to this settlement?
So while there hasn't been a set standard, because there is no standard commission, what has typically happened is when a listing agent goes to take a listing, they'll say, hey, Mr. Seller, typically we charge this amount and we will split it with a buyer's agent. So a separate agent that is not affiliated with the listing agent who brings the buyer. Usually, again, there has been no standard, but it's usually 50-50. A lot of times, I think that the general public is under the assumption that it's always 6%. It's not. It's always been negotiable. And I do think that there's a little bit of a misconception about what has been happening prior to this settlement. So up until now, it was required by the National Association of Realtors for a listing agent to offer some compensation, any compensation, to a buyer's agent. They couldn't offer $0, but they could offer $1. And I think that a lot of people aren't understanding that there have been agents offering $1 commissions or $500 commissions to buyer's agents for decades, but the public has not necessarily known that. So I think that's more what we're dealing with here is public perception than what's actually been going on out there in the real estate agent world up until now.
Thank you for explaining that, because I do think there is a lot of confusion about how things have worked traditionally, particularly for people who are new to real estate, never bought or sold a home before. And Avery, now that this settlement has been agreed upon, how will this change?
I think it's, again, much more a change in public perception than it is a change in how things are done. And I think that now it's going to just be a much more transparent conversation between buyer's agents and their buyers at the beginning of the relationship and during the relationship than it has been before. Because up until now, their buyers haven't really been in the conversation as much about what the commission being offered is. And so I think that there's going to be a lot more transparency, a lot more conversations happening sooner in the transaction than there have been in the past.
Okay, thank you for that background, Avery. Much appreciated. Mike, let's turn it over to you. Do you have the same understanding of how commission negotiations will change as what Avery just said?
Yeah, I think like she said, I mean, it's just going to be more awareness. And I recently have had clients start reaching out to me going, hey, what does this mean for our transaction? Or what does this mean if I list my house? I think they're just more aware now that they have options. Things are negotiable. But honestly, I haven't seen any of my clients do this 0% commission for buyers. They're still like, oh, I think we'll just do it like we have been doing. But I think that'll change a little bit.
Is there anything that you're doing in your business proactively, Mike, to facilitate that change? Or are you sort of just waiting to see what happens?
On the buyer side, in case a listing agent doesn't have a commission for me, I am having my clients sign on my exclusive contracts that if in the event that a seller doesn't pay my commissions, I am going to charge my buyer a minimum or a percentage. So yes, on my exclusive contracts, I am proactively putting that in the contract in case a listing agent doesn't want to pay me.
I hadn't heard that. Is that something you came up with, or is this something being adopted industry-wide?
Well, I'm in Chicago, and my brokerage started doing that on our contracts and my association. So I think they're just kind of proactively getting ready for this as well.
All right. Well, Juliet, let's turn it over to you. I'd love to just start by knowing, how did you react when you heard about the settlement? Were you surprised?
I was a little surprised, but at the same time, I think, you know, I wasn't sure which direction this was going to take the entire market. How people were going to react in general was more my concern, was just how consumers, how people that don't understand what maybe agents do, what their reaction was going to be. It was a little less on maybe how I was going to get paid, what my future was going to look like as an agent, but how just the public was going to handle this and how we were going to have to untie a lot of knots due to media misinformation or just people not understanding the process. So at first it was a little bit of confusion there, but as I have been just really driving into understanding all of this process better, trying to immediately make myself a better agent, whether I'm representing a buyer or a seller, I'm feeling a lot more confident even now. It's only been, you know, a few days, and that I've just been immersing myself. And I think that that preparation and understanding of the entire process will give people more confidence moving through this change, whether it happens or not. I mean, if this passes and goes through, it's going to have to affect everybody. But if it doesn't, it's still going to affect a lot of people that now understand that it was always negotiable and that they don't have to pay. And so how are we going to prepare for that now? And I think it's just a matter of having knowledge. And the more knowledge you have, the more confidence you have. And so that's going to be really important.
That's a great perspective. Craig, I'd love to hear your opinion as well. What was your reaction when you heard the news?
My first reaction when I ever hear a news article that just blows up is just like, wait 3 days and then kind of come back to it, because I don't like to fall into all the hype and the like craziness that everyone is saying. And so I kind of did that. I waited a couple of days, and then I just realized it's more hype than anything else. I think this buyer's commission was always negotiable. Now the buyers just know that it's negotiable. And so I think, you know, what Mike said and what Juliet said, I 100% agree with, is that you now just have to have those conversations up front with your buyers, bring your value. And I think this is a wonderful thing for the industry. It makes it harder, but it's going to eliminate 50% of the competition, and all of which are bad agents, and no one on this call is a bad agent. So we should be very happy about this whole settlement.
So I want to get back to that idea of some people leaving the industry, but Craig, can you just tell us a little bit about logistically, like, how is this going to work? So you start working with a buyer. What is this conversation going to look like?
Yeah, so I think it just emphasizes the importance of the buyer consultation. I think a lot of agents maybe skipped that before, especially the inexperienced ones. And so now there's going to be a bigger emphasis. That's at least what we're doing with our agents, on how to actually have a conversation with a buyer, sit down with them, run them through the process, explain the value, and explain why they would be foolish to go unrepresented or to go with anyone else besides, you know, us and our team or whatever. And hopefully they understand that. And then, of course, I think sellers are still, if they want to sell their house, they're still going to offer a buyer's commission. And the agents are going to have to look at it on a deal-by-deal basis when they put an offer in. Hey, is the seller going to pay for the commission? Are they not? And make sure they let the buyer know before they actually write the offer.
Avery, did you want to jump in?
Yeah, I just wanted to add to that because I recently was a seller where this came up. So we bought last year, like we call it a fishing camp for my husband and the kids. And I guess for me, sometimes we live at the beach, so you can't get me off the beach to go to a fishing camp, but to kind of hang out at. And we decided after 6 months ooh, I think we bought a little too far away. It's a little too much work. We kind of want to sell this thing. And when you go to sell land, the land asset class is a lot different from the residential asset class that we're talking about. And so we interviewed a few agents and we picked the one that we liked the best to sell it. And when we got the contract to list the property, there was a clause in there that said he could choose. He was not offering a buyer's agent commission across the board. He was going to choose who would get what. And, you know, we were not need to sellers. We were not in a bad financial position. We had a need to fill, which all sellers do. They're selling for a reason, right? Not necessarily because they're going to go bankrupt if they don't sell this property. But our need was, oh, this is too far away. It's too much. Let's get rid of it. And when we saw that, we said, oh, hey, you know what? We don't like that. We want anybody's buyers to anybody in the world who has a real estate license, like bring us your buyers because we want to sell this thing. We don't want it to sit on the market so that, you know, we have to keep paying mortgages on it and just sit there if we can't get it sold. So he would not negotiate that with us. He said, if, you know, some agent that I've never worked with that I don't know who they are, they're a residential agent who doesn't know how to do land, I'm going to pay them less than somebody who I do land with often. And we didn't like that. We said, I don't care who's like Aunt Susie agent it is. We want their buyer. If they're qualified, we want them to buy this house from us. I mean, this property from us. And we ended up not using that agent and going and finding an agent that was offering a decent buyer's agent commission. He was offering 50-50 to anyone who brought a buyer because we wanted more buyers and we're happy to pay someone's agent to bring them to us so we can get this sold. And so I don't think that all of a sudden, all of the sellers in the country are going to say, oh, we're not paying. Cause you still want, you know, I'm willing to offer other agents a commission to bring me buyers. Cause I do have a need to get this sold, even though it's not necessarily a financial one.
That's a great point. And I feel for that agent because if I were him, I would not want to negotiate with you over an agent contract, given your expertise. Okay, so we need to take a quick break, but when we come back, more from these agents about their take on the NAR settlement and what changes they expect to see in the industry. Stick with us. Buy low, sell high. Very easy to say, but not always so easy to do. For example, high interest rates are hurting the real estate market right now. Demand is dropping and prices in a lot of markets are falling, even for many of the best assets. So it's no wonder the Fundrise flagship fund plans to go on a buying spree, expanding its $1 billion real estate portfolio over the next few months. You can add the Fundrise flagship fund to your portfolio in just minutes and with as little as $10 by visiting fundrise.com/pockets. Fundrise.com/pockets. Carefully consider the investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses of the Fundrise flagship fund before investing. This and other information can be found in the fund's prospectus at fundrise.com/flagship. This is a paid advertisement.
This show is sponsored by Airbnb. Did you know that I turned one of my first homes into an Airbnb? It's true. And it even helped me get the extra income I needed to launch my real estate career. So if you want to try your hand at making even more income with your property, Airbnb is the place to be. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host. The dream of owning a vacation home can be daunting. From finding the best guests, to the maintenance, to organizing the cleaners after every guest day. With Vacasa, they make that dream into a reality. As a full-service vacation home management company with vacation homes in key destinations across the U.S., they know a thing about how to make owning a vacation home easy and profitable. On top of proactive property maintenance visits by professional local teams, a hospitality-driven booking platform, and around-the-clock support, Vacasa earns homeowners an average of 20% more revenue from their vacation homes. Vacasa is always thinking of ways to simplify the vacation home owning experience by putting your home to work for you. If you're looking to make more from your vacation home, work with the reliable property manager, and finally have peace of mind, partner with Vacasa at vacasa.com/biggerpockets. That's vacasa.com/biggerpockets.
Welcome back, everyone. I'm here with agents Avery, Juliet, Craig, and Mike talking about the NAR settlement. Let's jump back in. Juliet, I'm curious, you know, we talked a little bit and you all seem like pretty calm about this, I have to say. Like, you know, you read these things on the internet and you or social media and everyone seems to be freaking out and all four of you just have this calm demeanor. Juliet, do you think that's universal across the industry, or are people sort of, like Craig said, maybe newer agents or less experienced agents? Are they concerned about this maybe more than the four of you are?
I would imagine agents with less experience in general, no matter how long you've been in the business, if you haven't been having these types of conversations or been through these processes, you might be a bit more nervous because you're not going to be as prepared. And there will be agents who will be more prepared, who understand how to have these conversations with their listing agents and with their sellers. There's going to be somebody that's going to be having these conversations already or has been doing them for years. And if you haven't been doing them, you might be a bit nervous. I think that with what Craig was saying and what a lot of people are saying, there certainly are going to be a huge exit of agents, those people that were part-time, the people that don't want to do the hard work, because it is going to be more work. And some people don't like that. And some people certainly thought that getting your license was super easy. All you have to do is open doors, that it's just a walk in the park. And that is never been the case, at least ever for me. It's always been extremely difficult one way or another. Every transaction is different. And I think that a lot of people are certainly going to be bummed out that they now have to work harder. I'm actually more excited that I have to work harder, be better, be smarter. And some people are certainly not going to feel that way.
Do you think that we're going to see this sort of mass exodus of people? Like people say, like half, you know, NAR might lose 2/3 of their membership. Do you think it could be that dramatic?
Honestly, I think it could be. I mean, with just the way that rates are and just maybe there's other job opportunities now that have been opening up for a lot of people, I think that it could be. I would hope that there would be a small glimmer of that number that actually proves to be wrong, where you have people saying, you know what, I'm not going to be part of that demographic or that percentage. I'm actually going to use this opportunity to make myself better and to do the work. I don't know how many people think that way. I don't know how many other people have other options. I myself have given myself no other option except for real estate. So it's, you know, just one direction that I have to go, burn the boats type of a thing. So there's no exit. So it's just going to have to make me better. And, you know, there might be other people that have another opportunity that looks better, is easier, is more convenient, that they might go to. So we will see that over time. I'm a little thrilled, as Craig was saying, that if there are more agents, bad agents that leave, that's going to be wonderful for everybody else that stays and for all of the consumers, sellers and buyers and investors. It's going to be a benefit to everybody if bad agents leave.
That's a great perspective, and love the book, Burn the Boats. I was going to mention that after you were talking about giving yourself no other option. If anyone wants to read it, great book about just sort of like forcing yourself to find success in your chosen path. Highly recommend it. Mike, I think given how measured all of your approaches are here, I'm curious if you see that working with investors is going to insulate you a little bit or sort of change the prospect for investor-friendly agents, and maybe it might be a little bit different for people who focus on traditional home buyers. I've sort of heard this line of thinking where some people are like, all investors are now going to stop paying a buyer's agent because they've done this before. And if you're going to do a lot of transactions, maybe it behooves them to learn how to do the transactions and they're going to do it themselves. I've heard that. I'm an investor. I have no interest in becoming a real estate agent, and I will always use a real estate agent. But I hear sort of these contradictory ideas, and I'm just curious if you think that investors or working with investors may fare differently as an agent in the future.
Yeah, I mean, I mostly work with investors, and I think, you know, you can't just put them all in one bucket as, you know, what kind of investor they are, because there's a lot of investors who, you know, have full-time jobs and they really don't know much about construction and distressed properties. So they heavily rely on me, who is also a general contractor back in the day, to actually look at a distressed property and go, hey, foundation's gone, you don't want this one. And look at another one, go, hey, it's just cosmetic, 20 grand, you're going to gain 50K equity. So I think, you know, working with those type of investors, they're still going to see our value. And they're going to want to work with a buying agent because we're bringing value, and they don't have time to go look at 30, 40 deals. They just want you to bring them the good deal that makes sense for their situation. So no, I think investors are still going to, you know, want to work with buying agents. And I mean, I've had multiple situations where, you know, listing agents were changing leases or updating leases that were under market. And I found it during the closing process, stuff like that. And so we always have to keep their, you know, what they want, part of what we're doing. And I think that's the importance of buyer agents.
Well said. Avery, did you want to jump in?
Yes. So what I wanted to clarify is that there's always going to be those FSBO type people out there that are doing for sale by owners, or the type of people who are going direct to listing agents and aren't using buyer's agents. Like, that's, you've never had to use a buyer's agent. It's not like all of a sudden you don't have to use one. But an example that I want to give is, we had a very, very large hedge fund that, if I name it, everybody would recognize it, client, listing client, earlier this year, that they bought a couple years ago, and they're going to sell quite a bit of their portfolio. And they went direct to listing agents because, you know, they've got data that none of us could ever hope to even see. They've got unlimited money and limited access to data. And they bought several short-term rentals in a few of our markets. And what happened was, there were things that needed to be disclosed about these properties, the septic systems specifically, where the listing agent on these was from out of town and did not properly disclose that these five-bedroom properties, there's two of them, were on one-bedroom septics. Well, in that market, you have to list a property according to the number of bedrooms the septic is rated for, which is one. But they were both listed as five-bedroom properties. They bought these properties, and when they came to list them with us, we had to, unfortunately, let them know, like, hey, guys, you don't have 2 5-bedrooms. You've got 2 1-bedrooms that we now have to list as 1-bedrooms. You bought them as 5-bedrooms. And of course, I would not say this to them, but like any good buyer's agent in the market would have known, like, hey, we need to check this out. This needs to be disclosed, because now they're in a bad situation. And that, coupled with a few other things, they're going to be down about $1 million across this portfolio because of these very data-driven decisions that they didn't have that qualitative information of a local expert to tell them, hey, we don't need to buy this, or, you know, maybe we need to look elsewhere. So the people that aren't using agents are just not going to use agents. Those people have always existed. But the value of using one to help you not make those $1 million mistakes that a Wall Street fund that has, you know, like I said, access to everything we could never dream of having, from making $1 million mistakes.
So I think another thing to think about when investors, you know, in the conversation of having investors use buyer's agents, sometimes investors don't see things in the eyes of the buyer. They're going to just be seeing things strictly as numbers. They're going to be seeing, you know, they don't see what someone is going to want to appreciate in a home, what the neighborhood is really like. They're just coming at it with the numbers and how they're going to make out afterwards. And having a buyer's agent that can understand what a consumer actually wants and having those viewpoints is really valuable that sometimes they don't have. Some of them have that and they're really, really good. They might not need agents, as Avery's saying, but there are going to be some that do want someone's input and are going to want that expertise that they might not always think about or have. Just having an extra set of eyes is going to be very helpful for them.
Craig, I'd like to get your take on this investor thing. Do you think that sort of differentiating yourself as an investor-focused and investor-friendly agent is going to change the way you navigate this upcoming shift?
Yeah, so I think it's great to focus on investors, but I think like one thing that I've kind of been thinking about even the last couple of years as just the market has changed, not even just with this whole NAR settlement, is that I think it's silly to just have one kind of customer, like, right? Because then if the investors go away for some reason in your market, now you're totally severed. You don't have anything else. So we've been pivoting as well, getting more into the residential space as well. Of course, we've still got our investor arm, but we're doing a lot more with just traditional people buying homes and stuff like that. And so one thing I wanted to add to kind of the previous conversation was, you know, there's a reason why there are people out there that are full-time investors and full-time, like a full-time investors that aren't agents and full-time agents that aren't investors. They're two completely different things. And to think that one person can do the other as well as, it's like saying an electrician could do the same job as a plumber, right? Like they both know how to work on houses, but they're two totally different things. And so I think that, you know, you might see some people try to do each, but like Avery just brilliantly pointed out, they might catch themselves with some massive losses by not having a trusted professional doing the correct side of the transaction.
Okay, we have to take one more short break, but we'll be right back. Stick around.
Top real estate investors love to talk about how they save so much on taxes, but how are they able to build rental property empires while skirting Uncle Sam? 1031 exchanges. 1031 exchanges allow you to defer capital gains taxes while you sell an investment property, exchanging your old property for a bigger, better one and avoiding the tax man while you do it. And that's where First American Exchange Company comes in. They're the leaders in 1031 exchanges. Whether you're a seasoned investor or just starting, First American Exchange can help you with simple rental property exchanges, complex commercial real estate investments, reverse exchanges, and more. Don't let your taxes eat into your profits. Visit First American Exchange Company at firstexchange.com or call them at 800-556-2520. That's firstexchange.com or 800-556-2520. Keep your money in your pocket and propel your portfolio further at firstexchange.com. First American Exchange Company does not provide tax or legal advice. Consult your financial, real estate, tax, or legal advisor about your circumstances. First American Exchange Company. Safe, smart, secure. eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential? And then through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you can make sure your ride stays running smoothly. Brake kits, LED lights, exhaust kits, turbochargers, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome back to Bigger Pockets. Let's get back into our conversation. So Mike, let's start with you. I'd like to turn the conversation here a little more towards advice. So Mike, if there is an agent out there who's maybe newer or not, is feeling uncomfortable, uncertain about the upcoming changes in the industry, what advice would you give them? What should people be thinking about and doing right now?
I think just transparency is going to be super important up front. And telling your clients or potential clients, hey, there's this, you know, issue going on right now. Things are kind of pretty negotiable right now. And just kind of being upfront about what the options are, what the benefits of those options are. You know, as we talked about before, yeah, you could not pay a buyer's agent, but who's going to come see your house if you're not, paying them? So, you know, go over those options, kind of let them decide. And I think protecting yourself too with the contracts that you have, with minimums, you know, saying, hey, if someone, you know, the buyer agent or the seller agent doesn't want to pay us, you know, I have to charge you at least $4,000 or whatever for my time of driving around and helping you assess these properties, et cetera. So I think just transparency and trying to protect yourself as best as possible.
That's great advice. Avery, same question. How would you counsel an agent right now?
So what my advice would be just to chill out and wait and see. The real estate industry is incredibly slow moving. Wait to kind of see what happens. And we had a really perfectly timed thing happen yesterday and today, right? Just in time to talk about this on the podcast. So we on the buyer side had our first buyer who wanted to buy a property, make an offer on a property that was offering 0% to a buyer's agent. And so our agent let the buyer know. They went to the seller, to the listing agent, said, hey guys, we want to make an offer. You guys willing to pay a buyer's agent? They said, you know, just submit the offer. So we put everything in and said, okay, you know, you guys are going to pay the buyer's agent X amount. The seller said, I'm not paying a buyer's agent, period. Like, I'm not paying for that. We'll let the buyer pay for that. So we go back to the buyer and we said, hey, you know what? Seller doesn't want to pay. So we're going to have to figure out, you know, how do you guys want to move forward with, we can't work for free. So if you guys want to move forward with this deal without us, you're welcome to do that. Or we can figure out a way for, you know, you guys to pay the buyer's agent fee, whatever that is, we'll work it out. Or, you know, what do you want to do? And the buyer said, I don't want to buy this house, but we've been working with you guys for a year. Let's go find something that works where they are offering one. So we said, wow, okay, we'll go find you another one. Today, that same seller called back and said, hey, actually, we will pay you, submit the offer, because we weren't going to offer at all. So I think that, you know, that kind of illustrates the point of like, if you just really, really want, there's going to be those people regardless. The people who are going to go direct to a listing agent who don't want to use a buyer's agent, those people have been out there forever and they do it that way. And then there are also the for sale by owner people who don't want to pay an agent at all that have been listing that way for decades. So nothing is really changing that much except the conversation that has to be had around it.
Well, thank you for sharing that story. That's super interesting. I was wondering how quickly this was going to start happening. And it sounds like these kind of things are already happening, but maybe it's just this like temporary turmoil here. And, you know, it sounds like the seller and their agent sort of figured this out and were able to find something agreeable in just a couple of days.
I just wanted to add something on that, on what to be saying to either new agents or just people that are, you know, worried about what's going to happen next. Whether or not this goes through, I think the best thing is to just take this as an opportunity to just improve yourself now, just to be a better buyer's agent now and really just understand the entire process and start educating people today. Just use it, no matter what happens, as an opportunity to just become better now.
That's such a good point, too, because buyers are probably also wondering about what's happening. And as Mike said, and as you said, Juliet, like just being transparent and helping them understand and show that you have nothing to hide and you're trying to navigate through this situation with them, I'm sure will build a lot of rapport and trust with your clients. Let's turn to the investor side of things. Craig, if you were an investor who's trying to figure out how to navigate this situation, is there anything, as you know, if you were buying a new house, is there anything you would be doing differently or questions you would be asking your agent right now?
I think this just really emphasizes the importance of using a good agent, because effectively now the buyer always paid for it. But now everyone knows that it's negotiable, so it seems a little bit more seriously that the buyer is paying for it. And so I think you need to ask just some serious questions about, hey, agent, do you have any investments yourself? How can you help me? Do you have contractors? Do you have all of the things that you're looking for in an investor-friendly agent? Like, you've just got to make sure to ask the appropriate questions to make sure that you're getting the best value for the agent. I don't think you can use your uncle anymore just because he's your uncle. And I think that's going to be really the biggest thing.
I was just going to add to that. And I think, Craig, it's important that, yeah, you do have a realtor who has the experience of houses that you're trying to buy. I mean, there's so many times I've run into realtors who are selling houses. They don't even own a house. I call them real estate agent posers. I mean, how are you going to sell houses to people when you don't even have one yourself? And not to try to get on people who are not in a good situation. But if you're in this profession, and especially if you're working with investors, you should have an investment portfolio to work with those. I do. So I can say, hey, this is how an Airbnb property works. This is how a short-term or long-term rental property. This is how a multi-unit works, because I have those properties to share with my clients. And that's what I think makes me a good agent for those types of clients. And so I think finding those types of realtors is going to be really important for investors moving forward.
That's great advice. And as someone who's not an agent, but has interviewed dozens and dozens of agents, it is so obvious to me, like when you meet with an agent who knows what they're talking about and has worked with investors before, and ones who really are just trying to sell you on the homebuyer dream home kind of thing. And I think the more that you can talk about numbers or talk about your own personal experience, the good and the bad, like I personally love that when agents tell me, oh, I had this bad experience, or I used to recommend this contractor, but it didn't work out, because like that's just the business, that's just how it works. And the more transparent you can be and more you can show that you understand the things that that real estate investors are thinking about, the better you're going to be. Before we go, Avery or Juliet, do either of you have any thoughts or advice that you want to give to investors?
I would say, you know, to investors, just keep in mind the value that some of these agents are really bringing to you. And if there's some that are not bringing value to you, you know, really kind of interview others who can really help you through the process, whether it's finding off-market deals or negotiating really strongly for you, or when it comes to the sell side, really representing you very well and being able to find a great buyer's agent and compensating that buyer's agent appropriately. It's going to be a really good time to just focus on who can serve you best and really just have a better interview process, to what Mike was saying earlier.
I agree. Just making sure that you're asking the right questions of every agent and not just going with the first agent that slides into your DMs because you went on a Facebook group for the market you want to buy in and said, I'm looking for an agent. Make sure that you interview everyone and ask the right questions to make sure that they are the best value, the best person to do the job for you.
I think the process might slow down a little bit, right? I think before you could hop on BiggerPockets, get an investor-friendly agent, go see a house that afternoon and put under contract. Now, the buyer's agents, and just to let all the buyers know, is that it's going to probably be a little bit more like, hey, there is going to be a buyer's consultation. They are going to actually show you the value that they provide so that you will then sign an exclusive right to buy and commit to that person before going to see that house. And so I think like those days might be past us where you can get into houses in 30 seconds.
Well, that to me, that sounds like another maybe good side effect, silver lining thing here. That like if it forces you to really talk, interview your agent and pick the best one, that's probably best for agents and investors over the long run.
Yeah. Should have been doing that anyway.
100%.
Yes, definitely should have been doing that anyway. But if this is a reminder and we'll force people to do it, maybe it's just the kick in the butt some people need. All right. Well, Avery, Mike, Juliet, Craig, thank you all so much for being here. We really appreciate you sharing your insights, your expertise in this, you know, somewhat confusing but interesting time in the real estate investing industry. We hope to have you all back sometime soon so we can hear about how things actually play out over the next couple of months.
Awesome. Thanks a lot.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Thanks so much, Dave. Good to see you.
Thanks again to the whole crew that was here for sharing their insights and information here. I was genuinely surprised about how calm everyone was, because if you go on social media or anywhere really right now, you see these headlines that are like, everything's going to change. And I have to admit, there have been times where I've thought that this is going to be a huge, pretty monumental shift in real estate, in the whole real estate industry. And while we don't really know what's going to happen, we're going to have to see how things played out. I found the conversation that we just had a bit reassuring to hear that real estate agents are still finding ways to add value and to be beneficial to transactions for the people that they work with. And I just generally agree with this sentiment that a lot of them shared, which is that if you're good at what you do, and if you pursue excellence and you add value, that there's always going to be a place for you. Even, you know, that's true in the real estate industry. It's true as an agent. It's true in almost any industry. So I really appreciated that input from all of our guests here today and hope that it's true for real estate agents. So I'll leave you all with that. Always try to find ways to add value, whether you're an investor, an agent, or anything else. And if you do want to meet an investor-friendly agent like we talked about today, you can always do that for free at biggerpockets.com/agentfinder. Just put in a little information about yourself and you'll get matched with an investor-friendly agent who can help you with your next deal. For Bigger Pockets, I'm Dave Meyer. Thanks for listening.
On the Market was created by me, Dave Meyer, and Kalen Bennett. The show is produced by Kalen Bennett with editing by Exodus Media. Copywriting is by Calico Content, and we want to extend a big thank you to everyone at Bigger Pockets for making this show possible.
The housing market is changing, and finding your way right now can be a bit tricky. There are rate shifts, there are confusing headlines, but at the end of the day, your goal hasn't changed. You probably still want financial freedom as much as ever. Well, the good thing is that experienced investors know it's not about trying to time the market, it's about the amount of time you have in the market. And if you're ready to get into real estate investing game, you can still do that, or you can take your game to the next level by finding an investor-friendly agent. With BiggerPockets Agent Finder, you can find the right agent in just a few minutes. You head over to biggerpockets.com/deals, enter in some details about what you want, where you want to buy, and boom, you instantly get matched with an investor-friendly agent who fits the bill. These local market experts can help you navigate the neighborhoods, analyze the numbers, and take action with confidence once and for all. This free resource is only available at biggerpockets.com/deals. Get an agent, get the deal, and get closer to financial freedom at biggerpockets.com/deals. That's biggerpockets.com/deals to find your investor-friendly agent today.
The content of this podcast is for informational purposes only. Past performance is not indicative of future results, and all hosts and participant opinions are their own. Investments in any asset, real estate included, involves risk. Use your best judgment and consult with qualified advisors before investing. Only risk capital you can afford to lose.
BiggerPockets LLC disclaims all liability for direct, indirect, consequential, or other damages arising from reliance upon information presented in this podcast.